Because I am normally in bed by 10:30. So, like, every time this is past my bedtime.
I thought you were going to say, I hang up with you guys and I roll over to the other side of the bed.
Fuck you.
I reach over to my sink to grab a cup of water and then I roll over in my bed. Chicago life, babe.
Oh, man. It's like I live in a closet.
Cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot cope with him. Can't do it.
You play the game.
I mean, listen, we talking about practice. Not a game. Not a game. Not a game. We talking about practice.
Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier.
Touchdown. You are now locked in to the Clock Dodgers Podcast.
Welcome to the Clock Dodgers Podcast. I am your host, Neil. With me in the blue corner, we have Adam. What up, Adam?
Oh, we fighting.
Yep. This is the way we have to relegate this at this point. And in the red corner, we have Josh. Greetings, Josh.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Oh, man. I'm, like, intimidated. Josh sounds actually ready.
He does. He sounds like he's been gearing up for this one, Adam. While you're doing nothing, Josh has prepared.
Cue the Rocky music that we can't get the rights to.
But look, that's for real. Let's make a vow right here, right now. Besides this moment, we will not utter the names of Duke Johnson or Carlos Hyde. Can we do that?
Well, I'll try.
I'm good. Let's start with Sam Darnold.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, the other names, you know, let's clear the air with Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, and Sam Darnold, because I'm not going to tolerate these gentlemen holding this show hostage again. Between them and Duke Johnson last week, we went forever. So let's talk about them. Let's get it off your chest. Mr. Adam in the blue corner, Josh in the red corner. I'm here in the neutral corner. Not really, though. But let's just say last week was interesting, right? After our conversation, last week was interesting.
I was going to say illuminating, but, you know, interesting, sure.
So, I mean, for anyone who didn't listen, we obviously debated these guys at length last week. Adam was very... insistence?
Adamant.
Adamant. Yeah, there you go. You were adamant about Jared Goff over these other two guys, and especially over Sam Darnold. And Josh and me were on the other end fighting for Darnold and Kirk Cousins, you know, as well, but mostly Sam Darnold was the point of contention there. And we see how this week played out. Sam Darnold is out here seeing ghosts. He's not doing anything other than that. He actually had a very Jared Goff-like game from the week before, right? I mean, at least yards-wise and stuff. But, I mean, how do we feel after this, Josh? Can we still defend our boy, man, or we got to abandon ship?
No, I don't think we need to abandon ship. I mean, it was the New England Patriots. Like, he played badly.
We're going to double down, right?
He had a horrible game, but no, I don't think you abandon ship.
Adam, are you surprised to hear that?
No, what I'm surprised by is how we were all wrong, and the real answer is Kirk Cousins all along.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins goes out and throws for 304 touchdowns again. It's shocking to me how under the radar Kirk Cousins has been, because at the beginning of the year, they just weren't allowing him to throw the football, and now that they've opened up the offense, he is just racking up fantasy points. And, for what it's worth, Sam Darnold had a horrible matchup, but that was my whole point about Jared Goff last week, is everyone was overreacting to one week against one of the best defenses in the league in a game that they just got destroyed in. But every other game this year, he's put up at least 17 fantasy points, and last week was one of his best. So, yeah, I mean, for fantasy, I'm still at the same place I was at. I don't understand the belief in Darnold.
And I think it's important to note also what Kirk Cousins is. He did that with Dalvin Cook going off too. So it wasn't like, you know, they faded Dalvin Cook and Kirk Cousins did his thing. This was like everybody did their thing. Everybody went off. And so, yeah, man, I guess we can't even, as long as the Vikings do things the right way, it looks like we can't even say that Cook is going to hurt Cousins at this point. Like they proved to us that they could both do it at the same time in the same game and it not affect either one of them. So, yeah, I mean, like Josh said, I don't think, and like you mentioned, like, Darnold had a bad matchup. It just is what it is. Like, the Patriots defense is literally playing like as one of the best defenses ever. Like, they're just insane this year. And Sam Darnold got his taste of it, you know, and it's just is what it is. And like you said, Jared Goff, maybe that's what happened the week before. We'll see. I don't know. Does Kirk Cousins play the Patriots at all this year?
Don't believe so.
That'd be fun. That'd be fun to see how that would play out. But yeah, it is what it is.
You know, with Cousins in the not Cousins in the Patriots, but just Cousins in the Vikings. Like, I think for me, the lesson here is not to listen too much to, like, we want to run. We want to run the ball. This is how we want to – what they really have to do is win games. And sooner or later, if the good players are in the passing game, I feel like they force the coach's hand.
Right. Yeah, it's fair. Yeah. Yeah, it was playing out that way earlier in the year. People were getting worried, right? That, like, they're just going to run.
Yeah, sure. I was – yeah.
Yeah, so – yeah, it's an important point to notice. Yeah, it definitely, like I said, they showed they could do it all in one game, which was important also. But all right, I don't want to sit on these guys for too long. Like I said, if you want to talk about Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, Sam Darnold, Duke Johnson, or Carlos Hyde, listen to last week's episode because we did it. But this week, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, especially with trades starting to happen. Some decently big injuries have happened. You know, there's a lot of stuff to get to besides our normal stuff. So let's start with some of that bigger news that's happened just like in the last couple of days since Sunday. The biggest one I would say is probably Emmanuel Sanders getting traded to the 49ers. You know, personally, I love this trade. You know, for me, I feel like day one, he's the most relevant wide receiver in San Fran. It's what they've been missing. I actually like it, even from not a fantasy perspective, but just a trade. I feel like, you know, the 49ers did well in that trade, especially when we talk about the next guy that got traded earlier before that. But the Sanders change a whole lot for you guys? I mean, obviously, you know, he was doing okay in Denver. You know, no one didn't like the guy in Denver previously. So, I mean, he's always been a productive guy. But does him going to the 49ers, is it more of a bigger impact on him for you? Or is it on the other guys that were already on the team? Like, how do you guys feel about this whole Sanders and all the 49ers?
I think it tells us a lot about how the 49ers viewed the wide receivers that they already had in camp. Like, I think Pettis is just – like, this is it. It's no hope for Pettis this year. Sorry. Debo's a rookie, so that's a little bit different, but that's what I'm taking away from it.
Adam, you think
it's interesting,
the Pettis thing?
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, for sure. I think that the 49ers are in a position where they're undefeated, so if they're out there trying to acquire a veteran wide receiver, it's because they think Sanders can come in and play right away. To me, though, honestly, the largest beneficiary in all of this is coming from Emmanuel Sanders' departure. And, I mean, ultimately, this is going to leave a lot of opportunity on Denver that is going to go unfilled. And there's going to be tons of opportunity to players to step up. And just, like, when you have this target void, it's going to open up opportunities there. So I think, to me, San Francisco is just going to continue doing what they're doing. I don't think it's going to be as big of an impact for Emmanuel Sanders as it is. It's going to be an impact on that Denver offense to see kind of who steps up into that target share.
Yeah, I've seen people mention in Hamilton as a guy that, you know, is the obvious, you know, beneficiary. But like we've mentioned in the past, it's never typically one guy that's going to, like, you know, take all this now. It's going to be spread out, whether, you know, Philip Lindsay gets some more targets, whether there's a guy behind Hamilton who they favor. You know, in reality, they're making this trade because they're just, you know, they're going to start selling guys. So it's not like they might as well just play their younger guys. They might as well play guys that they want to get action now, you know, to finish out the season. Yeah, well, I mean, Josh, is there a certain guy in Denver, or Adam, is there a certain guy in Denver that you like more now because of this? Is it Hamilton? Is he the only obvious choice, or is there someone else that you guys like sneak?
I think Sutton's target share will probably go up.
Which is crazy. That's crazy. But
I mean, he's only at 23% if I'm looking at the right thing here. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if he got north of 25, 26, you know, pushing those big numbers.
Man, that's great for Sutton.
Yeah, I feel like Sutton's going to be the biggest beneficiary of this. I mean, potentially, like you said, they're going to start using younger guys more, so Noah Fant might see some work, and there might be some, you know, potential emergence there. But, yeah, I mean, it's not like it's a high-profile offense or anything, so I think it just solidifies Sutton as just an every-week start, but he kind of already was at that status.
Yeah, he bullied his way there, man. That's a fact. The other trade that happened before that trade, which you kind of wonder if, from at least from the reports I've seen, this guy was, the 49ers also wanted this guy over Sanders possibly, but Mohamed Sanu is a Patriot. And it's interesting that we're talking about these two trades because these are both like two of the best teams in the NFL, and they're not being complacent. They're not, you know, sitting satisfied with what they have. They're just pushing the envelope even further. But Mohamed Sanu gets traded from the Falcons to the Patriots. You know, again, from a non-fans perspective, I've voiced it on Twitter earlier today and yesterday and got some people annoyed, some people agreed. But I don't like the trade for the Patriots from like the pick standpoint, like how high of a pick it was for them. But obviously this is a situation where a great team gets to take these risks, gets to take these chances, and it's only going to, you know, elevate their game. They're trying to win these Super Bowls just like the 49ers are. So they're going to take these gambles and these risks and, you know, really just looking at this year, it's all they care about. And I understand that. From that perspective, I get it. I know they always seem to work it out some way or another. They don't lose, so we'll see how it plays out in the end. But Mohamed Sanu is a Patriot. I feel like, you know, the wide receivers in New England are now just as bad of a situation as the running backs were. Like, you don't know from week to week really which guys. You know someone's going to get a lot. You know someone's going to do well. You're just not sure where it's going to go. And at this point, this is just the same thing for me. I don't know what to do anymore with the Patriot wide receivers and who's playing, who's hurt, who's going to get it this week, who's going to do bad this week. It's like unpredictable at this point. Is there any guys? Does Sanu muddy this more for you guys? Are you with me on that? Or do you feel like there's something obvious happening here?
I mean, the only thing that kind of was a potential for me when I heard this is Josh Gordon's injury is worse than it initially seems, and he's going to be missing extended time.
Yeah.
But even with that, it seems like it's such a weird move. I mean, paying a second for a 30-year-old wide receiver, that's weird enough, especially when they're still thriving. I mean, they haven't lost a game. They just beat the Jets by 30+. They haven't seemed to really miss wide receiver talent. You know, they're making do with Dorsett and Jacoby Meyer. Like, this seems to more muddy the waters more than anything. I think that from a fantasy perspective, like, it just makes Edelman the only person you can start in that passing game moving forward unless something solidifies. Even if Josh Gordon comes back, I think, because he wasn't really getting enough of a target share to begin with, and this is just going to make that even worse.
Does this hurt your N'Keal Harry, Josh?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that the Patriots must not plan on using him very much later in the year even. So that was one thing. That hurt me. And I think it also is good for Calvin Ridley because I think Mohamed Sanu is just like a really solid NFL player who can take targets away from even a quality receiver, you know, a quality up-and-coming receiver like Calvin Ridley. So I think having Sanu not be there will help him.
Am I saying it wrong? Is it Sanu? I can't ignore that because I say Sanu.
Am I saying it different?
I've always heard and said Sanu as well. Okay. It's okay. Josh doesn't realize that he's very Southern.
I can't ignore it, Josh. I'm sorry.
Sanu. Okay, I got you.
Sanu. I can't help it, you know, acknowledge it. But listen, it seems like with both of these guys that we're talking about here that just got traded, we're talking more about the team they left and how that impacts them more than the team they're going to.
For sure. I think Josh bringing that up is a great point, and I think Ridley is a huge beneficiary, but I also think Julio is a bit too, and I think Hooper is as well. It's just, you know, as we've kind of harped on throughout the year, or at least as I have, because especially playing DFS, this is one thing that becomes abundantly clear to me, but teams that have consolidated offenses are just so much easier to identify for fantasy. So when you have somebody like Sanu that was taking up targets and he's leaving that offense, and you've got guys like Hooper and Julio and Ridley who are basically every week players, it just makes you feel more confident in those plays. And even like a guy like Devonta Freeman, it gives me a little bit more confidence in just to potentially see more work in the passing game.
Yeah, for sure.
The Atlanta Falcons are like the best thing for fantasy this year, aren't they? Like their defense is, you know, a target. And then they go ahead and get rid of Mohamed Sanu just so that we can have some clarity on Jones, Ridley, Hooper. I just really appreciate what the Falcons are doing with their organization.
Yeah, I'd love to say that they're in every week playing DFS, but I thought that last week and I lost money, so that was fun.
Crazy.
Yeah. Do you mean you played Falcons or like you played players against the Falcons?
Well, both. I mean, that game, though, like, it was just a bad game to stack because the Falcons did so awful.
Well, you don't have to worry about it anymore, Adam, because Mohamed Sanu is a Patriot now. And I'm going to start saying...
Wait. Did they say Sanu Ara?
Josh, thank you for this new way to say Mohamed Sanu's name. We're going to start something here, Josh.
I can't believe I never realized that.
it's legendary stuff, man. All right. So those are the two big names that got traded. I expect more are going to keep happening. It seems like trading has become a more easier thing to get done in the NFL these days than it used to be. So hopefully we see some more names flying around, some bigger names, some different names. We'll see how it plays out. One name that got injured, that got placed on the IR, that is going to affect some fantasy seasons is Kerryon Johnson. I've openly not been a fan of this guy. So I'm kind of shocked. Let me say this. I haven't been a fan of him, right? And I'm shocked that I didn't roster any of his backups besides CJ Anderson when he was there. So I'm kind of shocked that this is catching me off guard. But as far as Kerryon Johnson, I know you guys are bigger fans of him than I am. And at least the carries and stuff he was getting, the work he was getting. You guys were believers in that at least, right? You favored him a little bit.
Yeah, his workload. We talked about it a little bit last week. I mean, his workload definitely. But I've never been a fan of the player.
Okay.
I didn't own him anywhere coming into the year. Man. I hardly own any best ball shares. I really thought he was going to be Amir Abdullah 2.0, and it's ironic that he's now on the IR because
two seasons
really
in a
fulfilling
row.
That prophecy so well.
Yeah, two seasons in a row.
So the only thing I'm bummed about is that all of my CJ Anderson best ball shares are not going to hit because they've got a guy in Ty Johnson who really seems like, I mean, he could be not necessarily like the real deal, but I think he's going to step into the vast majority of the volume on this offense.
Yeah, they also have, McKissick there also, right?
Yeah.
No one's talking about him. No one seems to care about McKissick. Everyone cares about Johnson. Is he just the flavor of the week? Is he just the young guy that everyone likes? Like, why are we ignoring McKissick?
McKissick's just kind of a gadget guy. I mean, he could turn into, you know, a high-volume pass catcher potentially, like a Theo Riddick in that offense. It's not impossible, especially because that's a role that Matthew Stafford has just had previously. But I think that most people just gravitate towards the volume, and that's probably going to go to Ty Johnson.
That's fair. Josh, how do you feel about it? Did you have a lot of carry-on shares?
Kerryon was not having a great year, and I think Kerryon is a quality player. And then so after Kerryon not being able to, you know, be more than 11.4 fantasy points per game, RB24 overall, we're getting a guy who I don't think he's going to be much of a pass catcher. And I think to be relevant on the Lions, you're going to have to be pulling in all of that passing work. I mean, he did get four targets last week, but I think he's going to be more of a thumper, and McKissick is going to be active in the passing game, and you'll be lucky if you get an RB2 out of either one of them.
Yeah, so now you feel like now we're splitting Kerryon into two players, basically.
And Kerryon was literally the last RB2, RB24, and you were splitting that, I think.
That's fair. That's fair. So then who do you want to own out of those two? Are you with
I mean, if Ty Johnson is available, I'm adding him. But, like, I'm not as excited about Ty Johnson as I am about Chase Edmonds, and I'm definitely not as excited. Well, Chase Edmonds, greater than, but I might even be more excited about, like, Benny Snell than Ty Johnson.
Interesting. And why? What's the logic?
Well, because the Steelers' offense, I think their rushing game has been a lot more dynamic and interesting and productive than what the Detroit Lions have shown us. You know, like when they had Mason Rudolph out there for quarterback, they had a game where they split the work between Jalen Samuels and James Conner, and Conner had a great week, even with Jalen Samuels taking like 8 receptions and having a good week unto himself. And then the one week before the bye that Benny Snell got worked in. I think he had like 75 yards. And it just seems like we're getting a lot more fantasy production out of the Steelers than what we've seen even from Kerryon Johnson with the Lions.
You with him on this, Adam? Are you concerned about both running backs, or do you actually like Ty Johnson?
No, I think it's a terrible situation. Okay, I mean, it, you know, it just doesn't project to be it projects to be an offense where they're going to split the touches between the running backs, and it didn't have a lot of volume going to the running backs to begin with. So, yeah, I'm not enthusiastic. But like Josh said, I mean, Ty Johnson's an ad. Like, he's a fine guy to have on your bench on the off chance that he does see the majority of the volume there. But as of now, I'm not that enthusiastic.
Got it. So we're not excited at all about this team's running backs. We weren't excited about Kerryon here, at least on this podcast, and we're not excited about their backups, that's for sure. So we're not gonna endorse any of those guys. The other injury, well, one other thing I wanted to ask you guys about the Kerryon Johnson situation. Do you guys think there's any chance that they bring someone in?
Like, completely, yeah, maybe, make these but, too irrelevant? But I don't know that he would come in and be the starter.
Right, gotcha. Okay, so we're not really concerned about these guys at all, and we don't want no part of them. But they will be on a lot of people's waivers, that's for sure. The other guy that got hurt that seems to be a more serious injury, or at least more than just, hey, you know, maybe he's doubtful, whatever, this week, is Will Fuller. Hurt the hamstring. We're all Will Fuller supporters here, so this sucks for all of us. Obviously, you know, still has played well in that game. You know, his stock goes up. Just becomes someone you can trust even more, rather than, you know, being concerned about the inconsistency there because of all the different guys. But this situation here obviously sucks for Fuller. You know, it just seems like he's just injuries is just this thing, man. It's like you're just going to deal with it. There's no way to avoid this at this point. How do you guys feel about the situation? Is Stills your guy? Are you with the Kiki bandwagon? What's going on here?
I think Stills takes over the targets that were going Fuller's way just because they're very similar players. Like, the way in which they're going to be utilized best. I mean, Stills, I honestly think, is a more versatile wide receiver. But as far as, like, having a large ADOT and, you know, working downfield, he'll be able to do a lot of the things that Fuller was doing. So he'll be able to run a lot of similar routes. Whereas Kiki Kuti, he's way more close to the line of scrimmage. You know, he's going to do a lot of his work after the catch. So I think this definitely helps Stills. It definitely is going to funnel more targets in his direction. But I think it also is just going to help Hopkins. I mean, they were targeting Fuller way too much for the production that he was having. I mean, really, outside of one game this year, he has not had a single productive game. I mean, he had one insanely explosive game, but everything else had been pretty lackluster. But through that, I mean, he was seeing 6 targets, 7 targets, 7 targets, 9 targets. So he was being targeted. So just having those targets have the ability to spread out a little bit, I think it's going to help guys like, you know, Hopkins become a little bit more stable, where he's been more up and down throughout the year.
Yeah, it makes sense. And the beauty in – not the beauty, I guess. I don't want to find – but if you try to find a positive in the injury is that – if you have Deshaun Watson, if you have Hopkins, if you have Stills, if you have the running backs who will not be named, like, you're not, this injury isn't going to slow down the show. You know what I'm saying? Some teams, a guy gets hurt, like Kerryon Johnson, you know, you don't know how it muddles things. Certain players go down, you're like, oh man, everybody's going to take a hit from this. In this situation, it's not going to slow down any of your other Texans. So you don't have to worry about it in that regard. It's just, if you're a Fuller, you know, if you have him and you depend on him, it's going to suck. But Josh, how do you feel about the situation, man?
Yeah, I think that the Texans really were sharp going out and getting Kenny Stills, because in the past, without Fuller, they have been a less explosive offense. But now with Stills, I think they can maintain some semblance of what they were doing. I don't think Kenny Stills really is quite Will Fuller. I think Will Fuller is more versatile, but Kenny Stills is helping them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he definitely is. It's going to be fun to see. I mean, do we know how long Fuller is out for now? Have they mentioned it yet?
No, I don't think there's a timetable at this time.
Might as well not be. Well, Fuller might as well not be a timeline. Yeah, it just sucks. Like I said, man, like, you just want to see a guy sometimes put a complete healthy season together to see what he can really do with it. And I'm going to assume he's going to miss at least several weeks, you know, with this injury. So it just is what it is. But definitely if you got Still, I wouldn't play Kiki because of this, but I would definitely feel way more confident with Stills now, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get crazy about Kiki, but just.
Yeah, really quick. Everything I'm seeing online is saying several weeks. Yeah, so
that's what I figured.
I would say for fantasy, you'll be lucky if you get him back to the fantasy playoffs.
Yeah, especially, like, you know, I mentioned all these guys. There's no reason to rush them. So it is what it is. The other two guys that were, I guess, important that got hurt, but I don't think are serious at all, are Matt Ryan and Thielen. Do we know anything about these two? I'm assuming they're both going to be back next week, but I don't know.
Yeah, neither have been ruled out for this week.
Okay, cool. So those are not, we don't want to get too deep
into Thank numbers. God.
Diggs went off again, though, man. Diggs went from nothing to just boom. Oh, man. Beautiful Vikings offense. All right, so that those were all the big headlines, the big news things that I wanted us to touch on before we jumped into our regular scheduled program. So we're gonna jump over to trust issues, and I feel like there was no better way to start trust issues this week than not with a player, but with the Arizona Cardinals. And there's so many reasons why I feel like they should be here, but the first thing to say is just fuck them straight up. I just have to come out saying that, because not only did I start Johnson this week because of their nonsense of telling me he's going to play, I also told people to play him when I was asked questions and start sit questions. And I was even asked specifically, do I trust him? And I said yes, because I figured, why would the Cardinals play him? Why would they play their star running back if he's hurt? Right? Why would they risk it? Why would they do it? So I feel like if they're going to do it, then how can I not tell you to start them? You know what I mean? And obviously that burned us, which, you know, it's fine. Like, we all make bad plays. We all make bad start sits, whatever. But then, you know, they go on Twitter, they harass people, they mock people, like, oh, you should have started Chase Edmonds. And it's like, what? Like, come on, man. Like, if you would have just benched DJ, we would have started Chase Edmonds. I know some people did anyway, but like, it just kind of bothered me more so because I told other people to do it. And, like, I felt confident in it because they made me confident in it. But Arizona Cardinals, I know you guys feel more strongly about a lot of players on their team than I do. I know you guys are, at least Adam is sold on the coach, even though John Gruden's a better head coach. That's fine. It's good. John Gruden has a better offense. He calls better plays.
You see how we both audibly laughed at that.
It's okay. John Gruden has a legit offense, and this guy is a clown in Arizona, but that's fine. What's up, guys? Chase Edmonds. Going crazy. I mean, what's going on here? Like, how long is DJ out for? Do we even know? Have they ever been clear with us now? Is he back?
I think he's day to day. I wouldn't be surprised if he practiced like Thursday and Friday.
So if DJ's back, what does that do for Chase Edmonds? Like, he explodes onto the scene when we all got, you know, fooled over here. We all got conned by the Cardinals. I mean, everyone's going crazy about him. Like, right. Like, everyone's going nuts, but like, should they be? I mean, what's going to happen next week? We're not going to play Chase Edmonds, even though we activated him. Like, I mean, how is this going to go forward? I don't trust the Arizona Cardinals, period. Except I'm playing my boy Kyler Murray because Adam wanted him, and I just drafted him and kept him. But other than that, what's going on here, guys? You guys make more sense of this for me, since you love the head coach and you love the offense and you love all of this stuff. Help me out.
All right. Well, I'll just jump in here because I'll have trust issues with them moving forward from a team perspective. In three of the next four games, they're playing the 49ers twice and the Saints once.
Ouch.
They're going to lose those games, and they're going to struggle on offense. It's going to happen. Unfortunately, that's just where they're at as a team. From what I've seen, because I obviously have watched the Arizona Cardinals a little bit more than probably any other NFL team this year, when they run the actual air raid offense and try and, you know, spread teams out and run well-designed plays, they look phenomenal. When they get into gimmick mode and start running the wildcat or running a screen on the 2-yard line when you have no timeouts left, like, they do stupid shit, and it's pretty infuriating to watch them make these decisions, because I think overall, if they just ran the offense the way that it's drawn up, they could be extremely successful. That being said, I mean, this is going to be a huge test. The 49ers, to me, are the best defense in the NFC. the Saints might be the second best defense in the NFC. So they're really going to have some tough matchups coming up here. And then coming off the bye, they have tough matchups down the stretch for the end of the season, too. I can't remember the exact matchups, but I remember looking at this before. So ultimately, I think it's going to be a situation where as a team, I'm not going to be like super confident in them winning football games. That being said, from a fantasy perspective, just from volume alone, they're still super interesting just because of how many plays they run and the fact that they have been efficient on offense. Last week, though, really made me nervous with Kirk because with Kyler Murray, because he ultimately was phased out of a game because they became successful running the football. And I didn't think that was something that we'd see from them at all. So that's given me a lot of pause as far as Kyler Murray being just like this every week starter, especially with them going up against these really tough defenses. So I think he, at least for me, becomes someone who I'm potentially questioning matchup to matchup, especially if you have a guy like a Kirk Cousins or someone who has the potential to have these huge blow up weeks as well. So I think that I definitely have more questions than you might assume.
Before you go, Josh, I love that you guys knock John Gruden like he's this old head coach. He's calling plays from 10 years ago. Meanwhile, these guys are running plays that like weren't effective since 2008, like Ronnie Brown.
I can't even argue with that. I completely agree. I mean, yeah, I've watched a good amount of Oakland too, and that's one thing John Gruden isn't. He's not a gimmicky coach. I mean, he might not make like the most aggressive decisions, might run the ball more often than I think he should or in poor situations, but like I hate gimmick because it so rarely works and it so often just like smells of overconfidence. So I don't know. I hope that the Cardinals continue to cut it out of their offense more and more because I feel like that's the shift that I've been seeing the last few weeks.
Yeah. Josh, give me something to trust in Arizona since I don't trust them. Adam doesn't trust them to a certain regard. Give me something to trust, Josh.
I think in these tough matchups, you'll be able to trust Kyler Murray. I think Adam was right about saying that they're going to, you know, more than likely lose these next three games, and there may not be a lot of rushing volume for Chase Edmonds or David Johnson, but I think Kyler Murray will be good. And you know, talking about the gimmick, that might just be a college coach thing, you know, because I think that type of stuff works in college more. And what we've seen so far from Cliff, I think he's willing to make adjustments. I think we've seen him change things kind of on the fly. So hopefully he's on the same page with us and sees what's working and expands that and cuts out the things that aren't.
Yeah, hopefully he's listening to the podcast. He's on the same page as us, guys, because he should definitely be taking our advice, right? He should be.
Always.
Always.
At least unless it's about Sam Darnold.
Or Duke Johnson. Can you imagine if Duke Johnson was a Cardinal? Oh, my God. Never hear the end.
Oh, my gosh.
Never hear the
would
end.
They, would they? I mean, it would be Chase Edmonds, right? It would be RB1.
We got to move on. I shouldn't have brought the name up. the next guy on the list, a player who is better than Duke Johnson, Mark Walton.
Oh, my God.
Do we trust Mark Walton? This was our first real exposure to him with, you know, this many touches. I don't trust any Dolphins running back, period. So you can have them all. Even if you do trust them, I don't like any of them. The only guys I trust on this team is Preston Williams, basically, at the most. I know Josh is a big Devontae Parker fan, so he'll tell you to trust Devontae Parker. But other than that, yeah, I don't trust Mark Walton. It's not even a test. It's not even really about Mark Walton. It's about the Dolphins and how they play and that they're not that good. And so it's hard to trust any running back there. But, I don't trust him. Do either one of you trust this guy? If you don't have him on your team, are you picking him up? Do you care? Would you start him?
Sure. First of all, I love the like Devontae Parker is scoring touchdowns, so he's good.
It's beautiful.
Because we all know that that is how you know if a player is good.
Of course.
If a wide receiver scores touchdowns, I mean, can't hear that come. So, and then Mark Walton, he may be a good player. I don't know. I kind of doubt it. I think he's a knucklehead. And I'm not sure that it matters on the Dolphins. They are just so bad. They are 31st in points, 31st in yards from scrimmage as a team. The best statistic they have as a team is that they are 23rd in rushing touchdowns. And the rest of it is worse. 23 yards per drive and 1 point per drive. I just don't think in Dynasty, I think you add Mark Walton, you know, if you've got a roster spot, and you hope that next year the Dolphins are less terrible.
Is that possible, Adam? Can we hope for that?
Yeah, I don't even know if I'd be doing that. I mean, honestly, I feel like the thing you were hoping for from Mark Walton is that he'd be a consistent asset in the passing game, but now you got a full week of Ryan Fitzpatrick starting, and Ryan Fitzpatrick don't throw the ball, no running back. They targeted Kenyon Drake more than him this week. So I feel like the only silver lining for me is if he's catching passes in that offense, because you can't think that offense is going to be reliable enough for him to be scoring touchdowns every week. Right. So if he's not catching passes, he's basically irrelevant to me. So this past week showed that he's basically irrelevant unless, you know, he starts seeing a ton of usage in the passing game again.
Sorry, Mark Walton, you are officially irrelevant. And to be fair, in defense of Ryan Fitzpatrick, why would you pass the ball to running backs when you have Devontae Parker as wide receiver? And to the last guy on our trust issues list here is a man who went off this last week. He went off, and that is Marvin Jones. That is Marvin fucking Jones. Is there any reason not to trust Marvin Jones, Adam or Josh? Any reason at all?
No, guys, I got it figured out. All right, you trust him every third game.
Yeah, exactly.
So far this year, 10 fantasy points, 9 fantasy points, 25 fantasy points, then 10 fantasy points, 3 fantasy points, 43 fantasy points. So, yeah, I mean, he's Will Fuller. You know, he's gonna have the occasional huge blow-up week, and then the times where you have him in your lineup, he's going to score 10 and under. It's going to frustrate the heck out of you. Yeah. I mean, he's a great best ball wide receiver, but he's the type of guy who in seasonal leagues, I mean, it's tough because he's 2 years removed from a top 12 fantasy season. So, like, he has the pedigree, but as far as that offense goes, I mean, Kenny Galladay is still going to be seeing probably the majority of the targets there. I think that this was just a matchup that he could beat, and he beat it over and over and over again. Definitely didn't expect it coming into the game, but if they're able to do that and still lose, I think that it's not something that, like, from a coaching perspective, they're going, oh man, we need to make sure we get Marvin Jones 13 targets again next week. I think it's just a 1 week kind of fluky thing.
Right. For a big Galladay supporter, Josh, did this kill you to watch this happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, Kenny Galladay's game tilted me, yes. But no, like, it just happens. It would have been nice if one of those touchdowns could have been a Galladay touchdown. You know, just one. Like, did we really need to give Marvin Jones 4? But it's what he does. He goes off. I can't really be mad at Marvin.
Can't be mad. We can't take it out on Marvin. Does the loss of Kerryon Johnson help any of these wide receivers in Detroit?
I think maybe Danny Amendola.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right, we'll talk about Amendola right now. Great segue, Josh. Great segue, man. Unofficial segue by you. All right, let's move over. We're out of trust issues. Let's move over to rank them. Let's move over to rank them. The first list of guys we have here are wide receivers that we want off of waivers, if they're on your waivers, which there's a chance they could be. They are Pascal. Am I saying the name right? Josh, yep. You're our expert resident on how to pronounce names.
I like to go with Pascal.
Pascal, however you want to go with it.
Pasquale, it actually is. But
no. And then we got Erickson from the Cincinnati Bengals, and we have Amendola, who Josh just named dropped a second ago. How do you want to list these guys off of waivers? So the first, your top priority on waivers of these three guys going down the list. Anyone can jump in first.
I'm going Erickson first. And, you know, part of me thinks that Pascal deserves to be right there. But it, 14 targets. That I like that. And for whatever reasons, the Bengals have been a good team for wide receiver production so far. I think they've put up five wide receiver 1 weeks through the first, you know, through this part of the season. And here comes Erickson. They're doing a terrible job of protecting Dalton. And so he's dumping the ball off to Boyd and Erickson. They both had 14 targets last week. And I like that.
It's hard to complain. So then who do you have second?
I think Pascal. Yeah. Because the big week potential. I don't know that I have any use for Danny Amendola. I don't think he's ever going to get to 14 targets like Erickson did. You know, that I think Galladay, and if not Marvin Jones, will keep him from doing that. And I don't think he has the ceiling that Pascal has.
That's fair. And I mean, as far as Erickson, obviously AJ Green, when he ever comes back, whenever that's going to be, that will affect him greatly, I'm assuming. But we're talking about waivers, which could be just for this 1 week. The interesting thing with Amendola is, twice this year he's had, you know, over 100 yard games, over 10 targets each one of those games. I wonder what triggers that, you know, if it's just game script, if it's just what they're getting given to them, what kind of makes them fluctuate so heavy and then like nothing. I know he was injured, right? At least 1 week or 2 weeks, but I wonder what makes him go up and down so much, so dramatically like that with Amendola. We know he likes him because, you know, he's a former Patriot head coach. So it kind of works. But I think I feel like just because of the AJ Green thing, I feel like I want to say his name different than you just because you did it with the other name earlier. Pascal, I kind of like him first. I don't know why. I just feel like, you know, the AJ Green thing worries me with Erickson. So I kind of like him in the order that, you know, I had him listed: Pascal, Erickson, Amendola. You think there's anything to this Amendola thing, Adam? Or do you think it's just never going
to be? Yeah, I mean, this is super perplexing to me because, I mean, I like all three as ads. But if you got to rank them, I honestly put Pascal last.
We all went different. I love it.
Yeah, I know. It's weird because, I mean, he's the most inconsistent in targets. I mean, the most targets he's seen in a week is 7. And, you know, if he doesn't catch 2 touchdowns last week, we're probably not even talking about the guy. I mean, you know, he puts up 6 for 106. That's great. We might be bringing him up. But, I mean, he wouldn't really hold a candle to Erickson or what Amendola has been able to do when they're having their spike week. So I think from there it just becomes a question of, like, who out of Erickson and Amendola can actually maintain the targets that they're getting. And I honestly don't know. Because I think Erickson very well could just be a flash in the pan, and the second AJ Green comes back, his targets go away like they never existed. Like, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Meanwhile, Amendola, I mean, he plays in an offense where he shouldn't be getting targets, but in the weeks where he's getting targeted, whatever it is about those matchups that they can exploit, Stafford's doing it. And yeah, I mean, he's getting a ton of targets in those matchups and having huge performances. But the rest of the time, he's unstartable. I mean, you're looking at a guy who has 2 weeks over 20 fantasy points, and then every other week is at 7 points or below. So it's really, I mean, it's a boom bust play no matter which one of them you play.
Right.
I think Pascal honestly offers the lowest floor. I think Erickson and Amendola offer the highest ceiling. So I think Amendola to me probably offers the highest floor. No, I don't even know if that's true. Yeah, it's tough. I don't know which way I'd go between Amendola and Erickson, but I think Pascal's got to be last for me.
I feel like I have Pascal like as the number two. He could be the number two in Indy this year to finish it out, man. Like, you know, I just feel like, you know, Erickson is going to get pushed aside when Green comes back, if Green comes back. Now, obviously, if like AJ Green gets traded, then Erickson for sure has great value. You know what I mean? Going all the way out to finish the season. I don't know, man. I don't know. I guess I'm thinking long term and not just 1 week. But yeah, man, this is an interesting group of guys, right? I guess if you're in wide receiver trouble right now, it's not a bad week for waivers. I mean, if they're available, if all three were available. But some are probably, and some leagues are not available. But it's an interesting group of guys. So we're all different. I got him first. Adam's got him last. Josh got him second. Erickson is an interesting guy. Amendola is just, I don't know, man. It's weird. The up and down so different. I don't know. I just feel like with Pascal, maybe a thing where like they're like, maybe, hey, they're realizing what they got. He could be that number two going forward kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, now that he kind of broke out, does that make sense? That like he could, they could,
if that's what this is. Yeah, he could. I mean, there's really not a lot of competition there behind T.Y. Hilton. He apparently he's playing ahead of Paris Campbell.
Yep, and Kane.
He's stuck on the team for a couple of years. I'm adding him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting group of guys. We'll see how it plays out moving forward, but it's an interesting group for sure. I love when we're split on decisions like these because it lets me know that it's a good question. The next group of guys that I want to rank with you guys is running backs that I'm done with in 2019. I've had it with them. And it's Joe Mixon, Melvin Gordon, and Devonta Freeman. I'll start this and straight up say I'm done with all three of them. All three of them. I want no part of it. I actually have Gordon on a team where I want to say I missed the beginning of the draft and he like was auto drafted to me, and then I took Eckler later, and I don't even think I've played Gordon since he came back. I've played Eckler every week. Like, I want no part of it. Like, he's just a mess. Freeman, we mentioned the Falcons earlier. I don't know what's going on there, but we mentioned earlier in the season that it seems like his time is coming to a close. I think we're right on that, but then Joe Mixon, Bengals are a mess. I don't know what's, the O-line's bad. Everything's bad there. So I'm done with all three of these for 2019. I have no hope for a big, some special turnaround to happen or, some light at the end of the tunnel. If I can get rid of these guys or bench these guys because I have a good situation going off of somebody I picked off waivers or drafted or traded for, then I have no problem sitting these guys. And each week I'll be hard-pressed to tell you to start Gordon over a multitude of guys that it'd be coming into the season you wouldn't have said before.
I think I am the least done with Devonta Freeman. First of all, he took a swing at Aaron Donald.
Like, he also got lifted off the floor and carried.
But he still gets credit in my book for just swinging, even if Aaron Donald is wearing a helmet. And his fantasy production, he's got 18-point, 26-point games. He has not been horrible. Melvin Gordon, I don't know. I would like to say it's a slow start, but I also kind of think that the team has just changed in his absence. Austin Eckler is there. They realize his, utility, what he can bring to the table. And I don't think Eckler's going away. And then Joe Mixon, that team is just not doing him any favors. I don't think it's going to get any better for him. If I could trade Joe Mixon away at something resembling fair, I would do it.
So you're most done with Mixon, then Gordon, then Freeman. You still feel pretty good.
Yeah, like I feel like there's some hope that Melvin Gordon gets going. Devonta Freeman, I feel like has been fine.
Yeah,
and Joe Mixon,
he doesn't get me excited.
Is a bankroll. It's fine for wide receivers that are in Cincinnati, but it's not working out for the running backs.
Yeah, it's crazy. Adam, how do you feel?
Yeah, I feel like you're just being dramatic. Josh is totally right. Freeman, it's a complete overreaction. It was 1 week, he got ejected, and they got blown out. So there's not a lot you can really draw from that game. In the 3 weeks prior, he put up over 18 fantasy points every single week. That's phenomenal. So, yeah, there's no question of me. Devonta Freeman's still an every week starter for me. He's a guy that I'm still trying to start in DFS. I think that he's just somebody who continuously is going under the radar. Now, Gordon and Mixon are completely opposite side of the spectrum. Mixon, I think he got you cannot start him anymore. You have to stop starting him. They're not even using him anymore. I mean, he's seen 8 and 10 attempts the last 2 weeks. He had 2 yards last week. I mean, what are we talking about here? Like, he's been phased out entirely. It's very weird, but I don't know if he's injured and they're just not disclosing it or what the situation is, but I think that he's somebody who, you can't drop him, you can't trade him, but you've got to just have him sit on your bench until something changes that's dramatic. Ooh, what was that?
I'm sorry. I was checking stats on Mixon and the NFL app. Sound was on.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
Rookie shit.
Not listening to a word I'm saying.
I was,
Listen. I was listening. Hold on. Adam, stop this. Listen, man. You guys are giving Devonta Freeman too much love, man. Week one, he sucked. Last week, he sucked. I know he got ejected and everything, whatever. But week two, he wasn't really that great. There was nothing. The only reason you guys believe in this dude right now, he has literally, a couple of receiving touchdowns this year. So if it wasn't for the receptions he was getting in PPR, you would not be talking this way about him. Just because of those, you're hanging on to him. But like in reality, this is not the guy he once was.
What are you talking about? You were just like, a guy who, just scores touchdowns and gets receptions.
No.
He's not rushed.
He hasn't rushed for one touchdown this year. He's a running back. He hasn't rushed for one.
That's fine.
And
he
then
scored
he has
touchdowns.
Three, but they happened in the last and only week 5 and 6. It's not like he was doing it, once a game or something. Like, I don't know, man. I think in between us is real what's happening here, because he's not the Devonta Freeman I once loved, I guess. And
no,
I'm not used to the inconsistency and the up and down and all this kind of stuff. I'm used to him running touchdowns and doing great in every aspect. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, obviously you don't have to overreact on him or whatever, but like there's just guys that I like more and I'm more confident in than I ever, am right now in Devonta Freeman. And it's like I'm used to the Devonta Freeman of old and I see it slipping away, I guess. And so that's kind of where I'm at. And I don't know if that's a team thing too, there's other guys that are there. Back when Freeman was there, maybe less cluttered. I don't know. But, we'll see. We'll see how it stays. Hopefully Matt Ryan is healthy and stays healthy, and it doesn't matter. Without Sanu there anymore. That should help. Let me see. The last group that we have here is QBs that should remain starters. And the reason I put these guys together is because they're all starting right now. They're all playing well right now. And they all have a starting quarterback who is not starting because of injuries. And I'm curious how you guys feel. Like I don't know if there's any of these guys where if their starting quarterback comes back, you feel like they shouldn't continue starting or they should, or if you lean one player more than the other, if that makes sense. So like the players are Minshew, Allen, and Bridgewater. They've all done excellent, right? In replacement of guys that were starting before them. And so Breeze should be coming back soon, I believe. Newton, the same, likely. And then Foles, I don't know how far we're out still. But do you guys believe any of them should remain the starter? Like, if you were running the organization right now, or even from a fantasy aspect because you want it to happen so bad, do you believe any three of these guys should remain the starter when the actual previous, begin of the season starter comes back?
Minshew.
Minshew magic's got to continue, no question.
So what do you do with Foles then? Like, does the organization have to trade this guy?
I don't know. You put a mustache on him and put a Minshew jersey and hope that he's better. But if you are an owner of a team, Gardner Minshew is your quarterback, man.
What about Bridgewater and Allen? Are these guys just future starters where they're at right now? Or do you think there's any chance that their teams will hold off the other starter and continue to rest them because of them?
No,
I guess there's a chance that Drew Brees retires, but I don't think that you can set Drew Brees.
Yeah, I think Drew Brees is still 2-3 years away from retirement. I don't know. I think Bridgewater has shown enough, though, that he could definitely go start somewhere else, but I don't think that he wants to. I think that he wants to stay there. At least that's what he's wanted so far. So it'll be interesting to see if anything transpires in the offseason. But I think him and Allen both have proved that they can start for NFL franchises. There's a couple NFL franchises right now that they could walk right on. I mean, in Miami and Washington, like, those guys are starters. Easy.
I thought you were going to say Oakland.
What's that?
I thought you were
in
say
Chicago?
No, I thought you were going to say Oakland.
I mean, maybe.
Oakland and Chicago.
I don't know. But
it
Chicago.
It would not surprise me if Cam Newton retired. I guess after this Andrew Luck thing, I'm just like, I just expect everybody to just quit playing, but
it's true. It's possible.
He may not come back.
Got enough money. Got no reason, man. Unless you just want to come back to play the game. Yeah. Cam's had his he's had some injuries. So it wouldn't make sense the way he's played. I don't know. I just think these guys are three fun quarterbacks and it just kind of sucks knowing that they have to be shelved at some point. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just kind of like, come on, can we win another game? Like, it's just fun watching them all do good. So it'll suck to see them go away. I wonder how fans of those teams feel. Like, do you think any of those fans want these guys benched, like, when they're all rolling like that? Like, I think Allen and Bridgewater are both, like, 5-0 since they became starters. Am I right?
Yeah, I don't think there's a single Saints fan that's like, let's keep Bridgewater. He's better. Yeah, I think they're winning, you know, with Bridgewater, you know, more in spite of him than because of him.
Yeah.
But I think that that's possible in Carolina just because Cam Newton's gotten so much bad press, even though I think that he's a completely underrated quarterback.
Yeah, he is. All right. Well, these three are fun to watch while they last. Like you guys said, I think Minshew will actually hold on to that. Also, because of the like public perception and the, you know, the craze around him. So that's gotta play it here. But let's go ahead and move over to the not so obvious flex of the weeks, where many of us are not so successful sometimes. let's discuss first of all who won last week. Mr. Golden Tate. Josh.
Yeah, dug deep for the number one wide receiver on the New York Giants.
You knocked off my Darius Slayton. You knocked off Frank Gore. You knocked off some hell of some competition there, Josh. You did it, man.
Golden Tate, I heard that Golden Tate said that they made – oh, who? What was the team that they played? That made them look like the 85 Bears. I thought that was so funny.
You're a big Golden Tate fan, man.
He's great. It's bullshit that he got suspended for 4 weeks just trying to make a baby. Did you guys hear about that? It was fertility drugs. At least that was his story, right?
Yeah.
Come on. Cut the guy's back.
It's a good story.
Yeah, he called the Cardinals the 85 Bears.
Oh, yeah. I made the Cardinals look like the 85 Bears.
The Cardinals offense looks like the 85 Bears. Sorry, ass head coach. I'm gonna keep slandering him just because I'm tired of the John Gruden slander. When this guy is no better, fuck that shit. All right, on to our flex of the week. Our new flex of the week since Josh won, we threw the party. Hurrah! It's over. Our flex locks of the week. Does anyone want to go first here? I feel like I should go first. You're not gonna steal my guy this week, so it doesn't matter. But I'm gonna go first anyway. I'm gonna go with a tight end. And it's a Raiders tight end, and it's not Darren Waller. It's Foster Moreau.
Neil, could you just please, for once, pick someone who will score over 5 points?
He's going to.
Just once.
He's going to.
Just
listen.
Once, dude. Have listeners.
Let me plead my case.
And they're really sad that week after week you continue to do this.
Let me plead my case. They're playing the Texans.
No, you do.
Listen.
He wears the silver and black. I believe
this
silver
is my first
and black.
Raider. This is my first Raider on here.
What are you talking about?
It's got to be my first.
Zay Jones or whoever they acquired.
I did not say Zay Jones.
2 weeks ago.
I did not say Zay. I said J.J. Nelson like week two.
Oh, so you did say someone else.
I'll admit that. I did say J.J. Nelson. Anyway. Foster Moreau.
That was a terrible pick as well.
The Raiders are playing the Texans. Who just let Ebron and Doyle get like 7 catches, 100, almost 100 yards, a touchdown. So there could be success had against these guys. The Raiders tight ends are literally their offense, other than Josh Jacobs, who I still want an apology from Josh about this guy. But listen, teams are going to – listen, have you guys seen Waller play? Waller is one of the best tight ends in football. It's not even a question. And the Raiders play Waller and Moreau a lot of times together on the field. Or when they see Moreau in the game, they think, oh, good, we can get off the tight end because Waller's not in there. Nothing's going to happen. And this guy makes plays, man. He makes catches. It's no joke. They play 2 tight end sets. They throw him the ball. He makes plays. Okay? Waller exhausts the linebackers. Moreau comes in and cleans up. So I believe he'll continue to see targets, more targets each week. Number one, because the wide receivers suck in Oakland. They got nobody else to throw it to. You guys are hurt, beat up, AB dipped. We got all kinds of issues at wide receiver. So I believe Foster Moreau can catch a touchdown this week. I do believe it. And that'll already get me over my 5 points. Adam, thank you very much. And then all we need is a couple catches, 30, 40 yards, and I'm going to beat anybody you guys put up. So Foster Moreau, listen, I wish you guys would dig deep for once. How about that, Adam? You guys should dig deeper.
Digging deep doesn't matter when your guy doesn't score 5 points, dude.
It does.
Like, what are you
He's
going
to do it. He's going to do it.
Darius Slayton last week.
Well, that's because I got bumped. I got bumped by this guy here, and every single Giant player came back to play healthy.
Yeah. Okay, dude. Whatever you say. Josh, do you want to give the folks at home someone who might actually score a fantasy point or two this week?
Sure. How about Corey Davis against the Bucks?
Love it.
with the newfound quarterback genius that is Ryan Tannehill.
That's fair. He is a genius. And Corey Davis is going to do great, just like he did last week.
Part of me wanted to pick A.J. Brown. I'm still not sure which guy to go with, but we'll go Corey Davis. He's getting a little bit more volume.
Yeah, take the easier route, Josh. Yeah, I'll keep taking the deep flexes. All the deep dynasty leagues out there, all the deep leagues, all you guys appreciate my takes. I'm helping you guys. Don't worry about it. These two will give you the obvious takes for your 10-team standard league scoring. Go ahead. Go ahead, Adam. Get in their 10-team league flex. We'll wait. We're waiting. Come on, Mr. Fucking Obvious. Go ahead. You guys can also
want to know where you're starting the Raiders backup tight end.
For the listeners.
What leagues? We're in a two tight end dynasty league and still nobody's going to start him. Like, what are you doing?
Listen, let me save the listeners some time. If you want Adam or Josh's flex locks of the week, you can go to ESPN.com and look at one of the articles that are up there and you'll get them right there. No paid memberships to any sites. You don't need any, guys who study that. Just ESPN.com and you'll find all these guys' takes right there. Go ahead.
All you need to find Neil's guys is just go to the Raiders depth chart and pick a name you haven't read before.
They're practice squad players. Thank you. Go ahead, Adam. We're waiting, Mr. Obvious. Come on.
I've got three people that I'm trying to decide between. So I'm going to take the one with the lowest salary on DraftKings. So I was just going through and trying to figure out which that was really quick here. So, my lock of the week this week is going to be D.D. Westbrook. He's seen a consistent rise in targets over the last 3 weeks, and he's actually begun to out-target DJ Chark on that team.
Yeah, I love it. Love it.
I think just from a volume standpoint, he's somebody who's been extremely consistent, and I do not see that changing, especially against the Jets defense that was just torn up on Monday night here. So, yeah. For me, D.D. Westbrook's the pick, even though it's way too obvious and, everybody's already going to be starting him. And, my apologies for not helping out the 32-team two tight end leagues.
I just need to win 1 week of this episode. That's all I care about. Just one fucking week. And I'll throw
it's going to be next week, I guess.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see, Mr. Obvious. We'll see how this plays out. And I'm not even going to Twitter. When I Twitter poll this, I have no chance because these guys pick your fan favorites. Go check what ESPN projected them to get. And you'll figure it out. But
dude, if your guy catches one catch for a touchdown, you're going to lose your mind and be like, I knew it. I knew he was going to do it. I knew that he was just going to fall in the end zone.
How many points
football.
Will Foster Moreau need to beat your players?
If he scores double digit points, I mean, that.
Oh, yeah. Win. Yeah.
Sure. If he can get to 10. Right. I mean, if he gets to 8, that's like, that's 1 point for the catch, 10 yards and a touchdown. Like if he could go above that, then yeah.
We got this.
Look, Dee and Corey Davis are both $4,400 and $4,500 on DraftKings. That's not obvious.
Foster's $100.
I mean that's what I've been doing each week is trying to pick somebody who's under 5K on DraftKings, and the lower I can go, the better.
Foster Moreau is $7.50. They will actually give you money to put him in.
It's a handicap pick. You get a handicap for it. Oh, man. It's all right. Listen, I spice things up here, guys. Keep shit original. Let's move over to the not-so-obvious flex of the week, since I should might as well change this to ESPN's obvious flex of the week. But let's go ahead and jump over to Fowler No Foul, which I have three fun ones for us today. The first one, Adam will be familiar with. I don't know if Josh will be because it's an MMA statement here, but MMA fighters should be allowed to use inhalers in between rounds. Foul or no foul? And let me preface this just for Josh as well. There's a fighter, Greg Hardy, former NFL star, right? One who was arrested for assaulting his girlfriend, I believe she was. Fights in the UFC, was on the card this past weekend. Was it this weekend? I think it was this weekend. And he used an asthma inhaler in between rounds. And he said it was approved by the commission, but his loss was his win was taken away because he used it in between rounds. Everybody flipped out when they seen him do it. They're like, "What the hell, are you serious right now? This guy's using an inhaler in between rounds." He says that he has exercise-induced asthma, and that he was allowed to use this, and so they're gonna fight it. But foul or no foul on fighters using inhalers in between rounds?
I feel like there should be like a stress test that shows that they are like legit and already operating at such a deficit that the inhaler is only allowing them to function.
That's what that's his excuse. He said that I take the inhaler so I could breathe normal, just like you guys.
I would like to believe that, but I'm not sure.
Adam, do you agree with the man?
Oh, I'd like to believe it too, but it's Greg fucking Hardy we're talking about here. I'm sorry, you don't get the benefit of the doubt anymore. So, yeah, I mean, dude is a cheat. He's a piece of shit, and I cannot wait to finally watch him fight somebody who can actually beat his ass.
How about Aaron?
That's going to be great. yeah, right? Jesus. But yeah, as far as like it being illegal, it's interesting. I wouldn't have ever really thought about it because it seems so out there. But when I saw it circling around social media, because I didn't watch the fight card, I was more perplexed than anything. I was like, wait, that's illegal? Like, I get it. But at the same time, it's one of those things that, like, it didn't even cross my mind. Like, I never would have even thought about it because I've never used an inhaler personally, maybe. So I've never really thought about the concept in athletics. But, like, is that something that's allowed in the NFL? Is it allowed in other sports? I would assume so.
He said he used it in the NFL when he was asked in his post-fight conference.
So it's interesting that it's not, you know, allowed in MMA. But... you know, as it stands right now, rules are rules. So, you know, no foul. But it, as far as like, should they change the rule? I don't know. Do you think it gives an unfair advantage? I mean, it is, man. I guess I don't know enough about what an inhaler actually does in the moment. My understanding is it expands your lungs or your, like your airway to allow more air in.
Yeah, I believe that's what it does.
So I guess if it does that, it could potentially give an unfair advantage because you're able to take in more air. But, you know, his argument or the argument of someone who claims they need it would be that in those moments, they're not getting as much air as a normal person. It's just getting them back up to normal levels. So it's not an unfair advantage. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah,
it is interesting. I didn't watch the fight either, so I wasn't able to really assess if he like got a boost from it at all. But I know from watching his previous fights that the guy had gassed in multiple fights.
Yeah.
So it's not that shocking to me that he's trying to use it.
Yeah. I thought it was funny, too, because, you know, there's a lot of controversy around him, obviously, with his past, which a lot of people are not in favor of. And I thought it was funny because I was looking up something on it. I came across an ESPN article, which if people know, ESPN has a deal with the UFC now. So that's where all their like shows are at. I thought it was funny because there's an article on there that says UFC signing Greg Hardy is a major mistake. And I don't know who this reporter is, Jeff Wagenheim. And it was from 2018 before they had a deal with UFC. So I thought it was funny that, you know, ESPN posted this article, you know, kind of knocking the UFC for doing it. But now you have him fight on your cards on your TV channel. You know what I mean? It's like, what the hell? Because at the end of the article, it says, at what cost, though? Endeavor is an entertainment talent agency that conducts much of its business in Hollywood, which is ground zero of the Me Too movement. The ownership should know better. Abuse of women was a depraved offense long before Harvey Weinstein, but now how tone deaf can the UFC get? Well, I guess the same question could be asked about ESPN, right? Same place you guys get your flexes. Yeah, it's questionable. All right.
Okay, Mr. Weinstein over there. We're just letting that one slide.
We have to let all pronunciations slide at this point. We let Sanu.
Pronunciation. What the hell is happening?
So now, listen, it is what it is. All right. Also, did you see he took a new fight, Adam?
No. Did they already announce his next opponent?
Well, Junior Dos Santos pulled out of his fight, and Greg Hardy stepped up to take it.
Say what now?
Yeah.
Alexander Volkov. Is what I've been waiting
for. Alexander Volkov.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be fun.
When's that fight?
I think it's November 9th.
Wow. So okay.
Really soon.
All right. Interesting.
Fun. You'll be watching that card, I bet.
Everyone's interesting.
All right. The next one, the NFL went too far in airing Sam Darnold's sideline comments about seeing ghost. This has raised a big funk, right? Everyone's like bashing Sam Darnold about it, or they're defending Sam Darnold about it. Everyone's saying they can't believe it was released or told, or, you know, told to the world. So do you guys believe the NFL went too far in airing this comment that he made about seeing ghosts? Because it sure looks like he was rattled by it all. How do you feel about it, guys?
Hell no. This is what I want to see. I want more transparency in the NFL, because I honestly wish that we got more transparency so that we could start getting some of this ridiculous bravado out of the NFL mentality. Because at the end of the day, when you look at how Adam Gase was talking to Sam Darnold, like, that's a really good communicator, or at least, you know, the right way you want to handle someone in that situation, especially a young quarterback like that who is having just the worst game of his life. Ultimately, like, I think having that transparency is exciting from an entertainment perspective. I think that, like, that really the negative aspect of it is just social media, because social media makes everything negative. So, you know, people are going to talk like he's a baby. Oh, he's terrible. Oh, you know, we're going to make all these jokes, and that's just it. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think as a fan, that's what I want. I mean, I want to have that transparency. I want to, you know, see Bill Belichick getting the entire defense together on the sidelines and having a huddle while they're up like 27 points, but they're still, you know, game planning. You know, I want to see those little intricacies. So to me, it's worth it from a fan perspective.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, because I'm all about the story, man, the rawness, the journey, right? Because, like, we could be way more excited about Sam Darnold having a good day if we've seen his low, right? If we know how bad he's really struggled to find that success, like, we can appreciate it more. So I feel like, for sure, it's better. But a lot of people are upset about it. I don't know. A lot of people don't like it. Josh, are you a fan of it? Or?
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. That's all I care about, man. I love this. I love the players that get on Twitter. I like hearing what they say on the sideline. It's just, it's better. It is better entertainment.
I agree. We all agree. Guys, stop boo-hooing about this. We're making a big deal about it. I don't know why. It does suck if you're like a Jets fan, you're like, our quarterback said he's seeing ghosts. This is terrible.
But he was. Like, it was just honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just sounds defeating. You know, like, God, man, what are we going to do?
I mean, it was that, too. Yeah,
it was. It was. You could watch your quarterback run to the end zone and fumble into the end zone for the second time in 2 years. You could also see that. So that's what I had to see as a Raider fan. Derek Carr, you son of a bitch. All right. The last one I have here, what?
A good coach could probably get him to stop doing that, don't you think?
Probably one in Arizona, right?
How many times has Kyler Murray fumbled into the end zone?
Derek Carr, that's the answer. More Wildcat, right? More Wildcat.
I like it.
I bet you do. I bet you do. The last one here in the, since we're coming into the Halloween season here. Teenagers who trick-or-treat with no costume should still get candy, foul or no foul.
With no costume?
Yep, happens all the time around here.
That's, yeah, the costume's where you draw the line.
Draw the line there. Are you cool with teenagers trick-or-treating?
Of course.
Okay, high schoolers,
I think it's got to be something that's encouraged, because, like, we all know all the other things teenagers do. Let's encourage them to do the one thing that's not terrible. Like, you know. I've never got the discouraging of teenagers trick-or-treating.
A costume could be as simple as like a Jason mask. Boom. Just a mask and street clothes. Sure. Good.
Go ahead. There you go.
But no costume.
When you become a teenager, it's such a different vibe when you're trick-or-treating anyway, because it's just like an excuse to hang out with your friends and walk around. Like, so yeah, just throw on a mask, or, you know, take 5 minutes to assemble some sort of costume, or watch an old Adam Sandler SNL bit and go as the man with a cucumber for an arm. Now give him some candy. Because that's the whole reason that whole SNL skit existed. And if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, look up Adam Sandler SNL Halloween costumes on YouTube. It's some of his best work.
Do you guys still trick-or-treat?
We walk around with my son.
Okay, I feel like Adam still dressed up and goes by himself.
I knew that question was directed at me.
We could be doing so much worse.
It's true. I very well could be.
It could be.
It's yeah, there true. Definitely is an age restriction. But I think that, like, even through high school, like, it's, you know, it's weird, but, I mean, go for it. Like, you know, like I said before, there's so many worse things that you could be doing.
The best part is when you're a parent, you gotta check for that poison. You know what I mean? Say, listen, kids, you guys put all your candy
on the table.
You guys put all your candy on the table. I'll check for razor blades and poison, and then I'll give you back what you, you know, what's not poisonous. And you get the good stuff. That's how this works.
Yeah, isn't it weird how those, like, black and orange candies, they never have razor blades in them, never. Or, like, Smarties, never. Or
Kit Kats, 100% poison.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually,
Kit Kats are, like, made of poison.
Yo, Kit Kats are actually poison. Yeah, they're terrible candy. Yeah,
it's weird.
They're trash.
But I have built up an immunity, so it's safe.
That's what we'll call it. All right. That's all I have for today for Foul or No Foul. Let's go ahead. Let's move to closing out this show. We have show and tell before we close it out. It depends on what you guys have. I'm just going to open this up really quick with a podcast episode that I listened to. I've spoken about them before, I believe, on the podcast. Stuff You Should Know podcast. I listened to an episode. Yeah. Oh, shout out to Chuck and Josh. He's a better Josh than you, Josh. Most Joshes are, like Josh Jacobs, that Josh. You got competition, buddy. But there's this episode. I don't know if you guys listened to it. It was back in, like, July, maybe the end of July. I just kind of scroll through their thing. Sometimes I don't actually listen to the ones as they come out. But they told a story about a man who didn't eat for a year. And I thought it was an interesting episode because I didn't know that was possible. I thought it was impossible for anyone to not do that. Clearly, this dude's some kind of medical marvel. I think it was one of the short episodes too, so you don't have to, it's not too time consuming. But I think it's cool because anytime I listen to episodes of podcasts where it's like something I thought that was impossible actually happened, it kind of pushes out the impossible. It kind of pushes impossible further away from me, if that makes sense. And so I feel like that's important to kind of hear of those things if they happen, when they happen. So I thought it was a cool, you know, a cool episode about, you know, this rare case that this actually happened. It was really interesting how it happened and how it actually worked. But I highly recommend you guys. It's a quick episode. I think it's like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that. So it's a cool episode to listen to. But yeah, shout out to that Stuff You Should Know podcast, because I listen to episodes about ballpoint pens or whatever just at random because they make it interesting. So yeah, shout out to that podcast.
What was the episode called one more time? Because that straight up wrinkled my brain.
I think it was actually The Man Who Didn't Eat for a Year. It was something like real obvious, like,
okay, like something I won't miss. Got it.
Yeah,
that's
I'll pull it up, let me see really quick.
No, that's perplexing.
It was, I didn't think it was possible. I thought it was gonna be like some kind of, you know, gimmicky episode where it didn't make sense really to the episode title, but it was called Short Stuff, The Man Who Didn't Eat for a Year. And the kind of, just, it says here that the bio part of it says, description says, in 1965, a 456-pound man walked into a hospital in Scotland and asked for help with a fast. That was the last day he ate for more than a year. Learn about the medical marvel that was Angus Barbieri. Yep, real shit, guys.
Yeah, man. Nobody let David Blaine find out about this.
He'll push it, right?
He'll be like, I'll do it for 2 years. Kill himself.
All right, what do you guys got for show and tell? Anything?
Mine's very short, so I'll just get it out of the way. My show and tell is that you should let your barber trim your beard because he does it better.
What? Yes, yes, yes. You know what? And also, it's one of the few things that I've ever done as a dude where I've been like that, like I felt pampered. Like, but not like, I don't know how to put it other than the first time I had someone shave my beard, it's uncomfortably intimate.
Yeah, it kind of, yeah.
But once you get past that, it's so relaxing. It's crazy. I love it. I do it like every 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. It's fantastic.
It's important that you go to a good place though, or a place with a good reputation.
Oh, for sure.
I don't let people touch my beard for the most part. I just do it myself. It's just easier that way. But I did let someone do it one time. It was at a barber shop. And they didn't put nothing on my face, nothing to moisturize, no cream, no hot towel, no anything. And safe to say, my face was bleeding by the end of it. It was horrible. And it kind of like scarred me.
Neil, why are you going to these back alley barbers?
That's what it was. I will not
name
it.
You really hurting for cash?
I will not name it. I will not name it. And I don't go to barbers to get a haircut, obviously, because I don't need it. But yeah, man, the beard is it's one of those things where like I gotta trust, you know, and know the reputation before I even commit, because like I'm afraid to go in there and they're just gonna like chop half of it off. I'm like, oh my god, you just ruined my life because my beard is everything. So yeah, just reputation is important. So Josh has a good barber, right, Josh?
I like him. I've been going there for a long time.
Got fantasy leagues at the barber. Josh got everything going on there.
Yeah, yeah, it really is a great barbershop.
It's hard to find. Once you get it, you got to keep it.
Yeah.
Adam, anything, man?
Yeah, I mean, last week, a lot of people seem to really love the Two Bears, One Cave podcast recommendations. So I'm going to stay right in that same lane because Bert Kreischer, one of the aforementioned Bears from the Two Bears podcast, he has a YouTube series that I've watched every episode of, and I freaking love it. It's a YouTube cooking series called Something's Burning with Bert Kreischer. And it's exactly what it sounds like. I mean, he attempts to cook a meal, and then he brings on a comedian friend or two as guests, and they just shoot the shit. And it's basically like a podcast, but throughout it, he's cooking a meal. And it's one of my favorite things. Like, whenever there's a new episode of it, I'm immediately watching it that night. And I highly recommend it, especially if you checked out Two Bears, One Cave already and enjoyed that, then this is right in that same lane.
Yeah, did you watch the one with Brendan Schaub and Brian Callen?
Oh yeah, I've watched all of them. But the Chio Pino episode.
Yeah, he was literally like killing lobsters. He had no clue what he was doing. He was like,
"Oh man, it was wild."
They're like, "You have to YouTube this, man. You cannot just kill lobsters and not know what you're doing."
The most recent episode that he did, he competed in a burger cook-off competition with Sebastian Maniscalco, I believe is how you pronounce his last name.
Yeah.
Sebastian is all you need to say. If you know him, you'll know him. But he competed against him, and then they're both friends with Roy Choi, who is known for like innovating the food truck, and he judged it. And that was a really fun episode. So, yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of them, but I really recommend it. I really enjoy that content.
So I recommended a man who didn't eat, and you're recommending a man who clearly eats. See how that works? We're just in sync here, man. We are in sync. All right. Well, I mean, that's it. That's our show and tells. We'd love to
hear. Are we going to say bye, bye, bye?
That end zone dance was awesome.
This guy.
Oh, it's true. That end zone dance was awesome. I wasn't even referencing that. He just said in sync. I just had to get it in.
Again, but, this is.
But man, yeah, the end zone dance is the shit.
Look at this. The end zone dance. I said in sync. You said bye, bye, bye. Had nothing to do with each other. We're just rolling, guys. We're just rolling. We are on the same page, minus the ESPN flexes that you guys hand out. Other than that, we are like right there with each other. So let me go ahead and give out your social media, since I love you guys so much. We got Josh's at JC Crocker. New article out yet, buddy?
Yep, today. Chase Edmonds on the front cover there.
On the front cover.
RB1.
RB1. Man, that's your new dude, Johnson.
God, my 22% best ball ownership just almost wants David Johnson to just go away.
I definitely have more Edmonds than David Johnson, just for sheer opportunity, you know?
Yeah, I own a bunch of both, but oof, the Chase Edmonds value, just, yeah, the teams that he's on is just so much nicer.
With that, Adam just talked over his social media handle, so we will not give it out. No, I'm just kidding. At the other FF guy is where you can find him, which, what do you mostly do on there, Adam?
Mostly a lot argue, of nothing.
Mostly argue, people will drop. What do you do on there?
You know, I interact with the fantasy football community.
I'm gonna look for your last tweet. We're gonna read it on here and see what it is.
Oh, that's good content. Yeah, this is interesting. I'm sure everyone would appreciate this.
The last tweet from Adam. Let's see what it is.
Just so you don't even know what this
I want
is.
Them
this
to know nice what they're missing mystery. If they're not following you. Okay.
I mean, it's true. It's a good follow.
Yeah. Okay, well, it doesn't look like you've tweeted anything, really. You're just retweeting people for the most part.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's why it's a good follow. I don't say anything unless it needs to be said.
His actual tweet, not his retweet. Peter Jennings said, depressing to think about how many teams were made with Chase Edmonds that swapped off with the DJ News. And Adams' response was, these are real tears. So this is the kind of stuff you're going to get from Adam. So please follow Adam at the
high quality content.
Yeah. Someone else said something and his reply was stop. Again, high quality stuff. This is good. This is good stuff. You're not, if you're not following him, you're missing. You're missing out. So definitely follow Adam at the other FF guy. And then you can follow me at Clock Dodgers. Go to the Clock Dodgers website, subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, do something awesome. Read Josh's articles. Follow Adam for the stop comments and other things with crying tears and all this other good stuff, man. We appreciate everybody. We love you guys constantly. We love their interactions and all this good stuff. Other than that, that's all I got. That's all you guys got. We're good. We're good.
We're good.
That sounded so bad. Just like, all right. That's it. We're all done. As always, guys, be kind, be great. Keep dying.